This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A California startup, Sonus, has technology that transforms accented English into something more associated with white Americans. The creators say they want to help overseas call center workers dealing with racist harassment triggered by their accents. But does this only perpetuate the problems the technology wants to address? This hour, we'll look at the realities of being a call center worker, the intolerance for accented speech, and what it means to use your quote-unquote white voice. Join us. I'm Mina Kim. Welcome to Forum. A Silicon Valley startup has developed technology to make call center workers sound more like someone you might think of as white American. The company is called Sonus, and here's an example of what they do.
Hi, this is Alex from the customer service aide. How are you today? Great to hear. I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for asking. So how can I help you today?
Here's how they'd sound with Sonus technology.
Hi, this is Alex from the customer service aide. How are you today? Great to hear. I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for asking. So how can I help you today?
Now, Sonus says its technology is, quote, creating a more connected, friendly, and empathetic world by revolutionizing how we communicate. So listeners, what do you think? Do you agree? Have you worked at a call center? Anything this brings up for you? You can tell us on Forum social channels or by calling 866-733-6786. And joining me now is the co-founder of Sonus, Sharath Kesava Narayana. Thanks so much for being with us, Sharath.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the invite.
I understand you worked at a call center yourself in Bangalore. I assume that played a role in creating the software?
Yeah, it did. I think there are certain instances in your life which actually stays with you for a long time. When I was 18 when I actually started working in a call center. I was studying my engineering and also trying to work at nights to kind of earn my bread. And the first thing that I I'm born and raised in India, so the first experience for me of joining a call center was going through an accent neutralization training. For 4 weeks, we were taught to roll our R's, bite our T's, and then day one on the job, they told me that hey, you should call yourself Nathan because it's more relatable and understandable. I think for a lot of people, it might be okay. But for me, it kind of honestly hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, why should I change my name? Right? For me, it was almost like somebody asking me to change my religion. And that kind of hit me pretty hard. And I started thinking about this. And it took me a while. But then I think when I came across a research paper of how accents can be converted in real time, that whole experience came back. And then I started working with my team on it. And then, yeah, it took us 2 years to get to where we are today. And today we've built the world's first real-time speech synthesis algorithm, which can essentially change accent in real time.
So how does it work exactly? Can you just describe, what it is?
Yeah, I think in a very simplistic way, what we've essentially done is we have an input speech and an output speech, right? The input speech is an accented speech, right? So this could be people from anywhere in the world with their own accent speaking into the model. It basically, it's a simple desktop app that you install on your desktop. And while you're calling in, you just change your microphone settings from a default microphone to a Sonos microphone. And then once you enable it, you speak like you speak normally. But the person on the other side basically hears this in his or her localized accent, right? If somebody's calling in from, say, even within India, if somebody's calling in from Northern India, and if the agent is in Southern India, the person will hear a North Indian accent. If they're calling into somebody in the US, they hear it in a US accent. If they're calling into somebody in Canada, they hear it in a Canadian accent. And if they hear somebody in UK, it'll basically talk to them in a UK accent. So the goal was to localize the accent so that there's no bias that gets induced in speech. So it's simple source speech. And then in real time, it gets converted into a target speech, localizing to the end person's accent.
So you think that's what the outcome or the impact will be, that it will reduce bias that is triggered by accented English?
See, again, we've had this bias going on for decades together now, right? Call centers have been existing for over 40 years. And even today, if you ask agents in India and Philippines, they definitely get abused on a call and they get treated differently because of how they sound. And my hope was, by bringing out this technology, if we can modify the accents in real time and make them make their voice sound more localized, people can get on with a problem that they've called to solve for and not have this inherent bias of accent, because the person on the other side is trying to solve your problem. And that should just be the focus of a conversation and not keep worrying about where are you from, why do you sound differently, and all those conversations that lead from it.
Yeah, but it won't necessarily change the root of the harassment that's triggered by hearing an accent, or maybe even some of the things you experience, like being told to change your name to Nathan and so on. Do you worry that your technology accommodates or even perpetuates the kinds of things like racism, xenophobia at times that drive some of the mistreatment by basically not making the harassers adapt?
No, but my point is this: our product actually works bidirectional, right? Just like people here cannot understand somebody calling in from India, somebody from India also many times do not understand what people here speak, right? I think when you build a bidirectional model, if for an Indian, if he can sound, if he can hear the speech in his own accent, and for an American or for a British or a Canadian person, if they can hear it in their own accent, it just makes communication and understanding a lot more easier, right? We are just trying to create a more localized world where people can hear their own accents because they'll respond better to it than trying to create a different bias through it.
But you don't think that it also, you didn't also develop this technology to deal with the kind of harassment that call center workers with accents get? You did, no, right? Not just to create these connections between people with like sounding.
Yeah. But the core thesis was that, right? Because all of us, like 90% of our company is actually immigrants, right? All of us have had our own Sana story, the accentism story, if you want to call it as. And we
you
all
said
want...
accentism?
Accentism? Accentism, like that's something that people didn't know actually exist, but actually it exists in the developing world because people go through those abuse on the phone. And we wanted to build it for people like us, where you no longer have to go through that every single day, because the person on the other side will not abuse you. And then now it's been, the system has been live for almost 4.5 months now. And to hear feedback from agents that, hey, I've had 30 abuse-free days, 60 abuse-free days, I feel more confident in my job, I go home a lot more happy, that makes us very happy, because that's who we built it for. Right. Yes, does the whole world has to change and be more accommodative of people? I would love for that world, but this has been existent for such a long time. And if this technology can actually bring relief to people who are actually subjected to it every single day, I would personally sleep happy at night.
You've talked about how the technology is a step towards empowering individuals. And I think what you're describing is some of that. But does the employee have the choice to use the Sonos microphone?
Yes. So the whole hashtag, and that's one thing that we've been very passionately driving, is your voice, your choice. The agent can choose, because the control is always with the agent. We deploy it on an agent's machine, his desktop, his laptop, his mobile phone. They can choose to enable or disable the product.
You launched this a year ago. You've described people saying that it's helped them. How many call center firms are using your technology right now? And are you getting a lot of interest from funders and future clients?
A lot. A lot of people have been reaching out, but we're still a very young company. The product has been deployed for the last 4.5 months. We've been building the product for over 2 years now. So today, as of this morning, we have roughly about 1,800 agents across the world, mostly in India and Philippines, who are using the product. Our goal will be to get to about 10,000 people by the end of the year. We are also launching it in phases. It's been incredible reception. And for me, hearing all these agents tell their stories on how they were feeling before Sonus and after Sonus, that almost like makes you feel great about what you've built.
Well, let me go to caller Nupur in Sunnyvale. Join us.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah. Oh, hi. So as a fellow immigrant, as well as a researcher of AI, social justice and technology and so on, I just wanted to offer a perspective where I think a lot of American researchers have, you know, as you can imagine, sort of pointed out how this is kind of unfair, or that this technology reproduces a certain kind of racial relationship between the global South and the U.S. But I wanted to actually, you know, appreciate and bring up the perspective that the company representative is sharing, because as you said about accentism, we all have these stories of just going to Starbucks to get a coffee and not being able to be understood despite being loud and clear, and just kind of giving up and taking the wrong coffee order. What I do think that this technology does or might do is take away the cognitive burden and overload that a lot of these workers in call centers have. So I think for Americans, a lot of this is about representation, or, you know, like knowing the human behind the technology. But I could be wrong, but I think for a lot of people like from India, from the Philippines, it's just about getting your day's job done without having to spend extra energy in role playing and, you know, representing yourself in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I do think that to that extent, this technology could be quite useful. Although, of course, you know, the call center industry has been around for so long. So I don't know how long it's going to take, or whether that's even a useful question to say when the attitudes of Americans will change as far as them understanding that they're a part of a global economy. And if that's not going to change, and if they are the primary consumers, you know, the people who have the money and the dollar, then how do we get around that?
Well, Nupur, thank you for sharing those points, and they're very well taken. Let me see if I can fit Fernanda in San Jose in quickly. Hi, Fernanda.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I understand what the caller is saying, and I definitely think about the mental health of those that are working in call centers. But my issue with this new technology is the unintended consequences of this technology that can be used to other things that we right now don't know. And as somebody who speaks with an accented speech, I feel that we're deceiving the listener, you know, the person that is receiving the phone call. We're also teaching people to be lazy, kind of like to not adapt their hearing to people who have bad accents, right?
Yeah.
And we're promoting this uniformity and not accepting that there is diversity in the world, in a world that is so interconnected. So,
Fernanda, thank you. Let me just get Sherith on this really fast. We just have 20 seconds, Sherith, but deceiving and not pushing the world to change.
No, see, I told you, right? I would love for the world to change, but think about 15 million people outside the US who actually do these call center jobs. They go through abuses at least 15 million times every day.
This is Forum. Thanks, Sherith. Appreciate it.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Here's what we're talking about tomorrow. Russia has intensified attacks on Ukrainian nuclear infrastructure as part of its campaign to take control of the country after major defeats in the east. We'll talk to journalists who've been reporting deeply from the region about the next phase of the war. And you can join us with your thoughts ahead of the show by leaving them in a voicemail, 415-553-3300, or by emailing forum at kqed.org. We're talking about new technology that aims to make life easier for call center workers by removing their accents so they sound more stereotypically white American. And we're joined by the co-founder of Sonus, a company that has developed a new technology that claims to remove accents from speech. Sharath Kasheva Narayana is the co-founder. And I know you need to leave us soon, Sharath, but I just wanted to keep you on for a few more minutes. If you did want to just say a little bit more about the reaction from one of our listeners about the fact that what it's doing potentially, right, is putting the onus on the call center worker or on technology like yours that you've said before that you wish didn't need to exist at all, as opposed to forcing people to do the work, to adapt, to check their biases, to be better to others, and potentially also being somewhat deceiving. They think that they're talking with somebody who may not be someone who would use an accent in their English.
Actually, there are two points of contention here. So one of the things is every call center that we've deployed the product actually says, like you hear this message, this call is being recorded for quality training compliance purposes. They actually say that they're actually using an accent neutralization software powered by Sonus, right? So agents, like customers know that there is an accent technology in place. And the second thing is 15 million people, Susan, across the world who actually work in these call centers, mostly in India, Philippines, and Latin America. They go through abuse every single day, right? So I would rather work towards eliminating abuses 15 million times a day rather than hope and pray that the world changes and becomes more welcoming, right? I would love for that to happen. But for now, I went through this incident myself 20 years ago when I worked in a call center. And in 20 years, nothing has changed. And I would rather build something that could change that.
Well, this listener writes, if a company buys the tech, can't it mandate the employee has it enabled?
No, they can't. Because, again, ours is a patented tech, and there's nobody else out there who does the same we do. So we've basically put in that philosophy that, hey, it has to be your voice, your choice. It has to be agent controlled, and the agent has the ability to turn off and turn on.
Noel tweets, did Sonus's founders see the movie Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley, where the African-American call center employees change their accents to white accents? It's great satire. Did you see that? Sorry to Bother You. What did you think?
Yeah, again, it's a movie. It exaggerates a lot of things. But it's funny, right? So I keep asking this question. So what do you mean by a white voice, right? So the model that you hear in our demo, where it's Vikram who speaks the Indian accent, and then he changes into the so-called different accent or a Western accent. But the Western accent is actually spoken by Brett, who's actually a Japanese Canadian, right? So technically for me, it's not like a white voice. It's basically a localized voice, which is more closer to a Canadian from Vancouver. And it makes people understand that better. So I don't see that as wrong, but I know people's perspectives.
Well, I know you need to leave us, Sharath. Thank you so much for staying on as long as you did. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot.
So let me bring a couple more people onto the conversation. Joshua Bote is assistant news editor at SF Gate. His piece actually inspired today's show. It's titled Sonus, the Buzzy Bay Area Startup That Wants to Make the World Sound Whiter. Joshua, thanks so much for being on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Winifred Poster, Director at Labor Tech Research at the Labor Tech Research Network, Adjunct Faculty in International Affairs at Washington University in St. Louis. Winifred Poster, really appreciate having you on as well.
Hi, everybody. Happy to be here.
So I've been listening to all the points that Sherith has been making, but I guess for the most part, I still feel kind of sad that harassment from callers in the U.S., regardless of their race, is bad enough to inspire a product like this. There are lots of other reasons that he stated, but that was definitely one of the driving forces based on his own experience. And I guess, Joshua, in reporting this piece, I'm curious what it's like to be a call center worker outside the U.S. serving U.S. customers. Your cousin, I guess, works at a Manila call center. What has her experience been like?
Yeah, my cousin's been at the call centers for a long time. I last visited Manila in 2015. She was there. I remember her getting dinner with me and like the rest of our family. And she at one point just had to exit the dinner a bit early because her shift started at 8 p.m., right? So call center workers have to work these overnight hours. It takes a physical, emotional toll on you. There was a study that 83% of call center workers had in Bangalore had sleep disorders, compared to 40% of the general population who worked in this like IT industry. So there are just higher rates of, you know, physical and mental illness among call center workers because the labor is so grueling and taxing.
Hmm. And what parts of it are the most grueling and taxing for her?
Part of it is obviously the harassment, just being yelled at by call center workers, being told that you want to have somebody who's on shore, and the sadness that comes from that. But there's also, you know, the late nights, the scripts that you have to read. There is just this sense of lack of control and lack of autonomy over the work. And as much as Sonus bills itself as, you know, your voice, your choice, technology is sort of, you're sort of constricted by technology in all of your labor, right? Like no matter what industry you work in, you have technology that you have to use. And that's, you know, especially applicable in industries where it's customer service oriented, you have to use this technology. So as much as I want to believe that it is your voice, your choice, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, Winifred Poster, you have done extensive research on call center workers. Sherith suggested that workers would have the ability to turn on and off this, or decide whether they could turn on and off this sort of filter that would change their voices. Do you think that's true? Do you think that's likely?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think Joshua brings up a really good point, which is that, you know, at face value, the worker could have control over, you know, the finger on the button. But what about all the things that precede that? You know, what happens if the call center management is very keen on this and then institutes other kinds of pressures and possibly disciplines for workers who don't do it? So I can see this being a case where it seems like they have choice, but they may not have entirely all the choice. And also, most of the technology that's used in call centers, workers do not have control over. And much of it happens behind the scenes through the algorithms that the management controls, the workers literally don't have any control over that. So this would be a very unique situation. And I'd have my reservations about it.
Well, this listener tweets, rather than create AI to, quote, sound American, why not simply bring outsourced jobs back to the States? Or is this another example of corporate greed and cheap labor? And of course, listeners, if you want to weigh in, you can post thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum, email forum at kqed.org, or call the number 866-733-6786. So, Winifred, just give us a quick history lesson, if you could, about American companies outsourcing their call centers, when and why this took off.
I think the first round really was in the early to mid 1990s, and call centers were first going to Ireland. But then what happened around the year 2000 is that India became a much more attractive destination because of the Y2K bug. Many U.S. firms wanted to have access to Indian IT labor to help with their computers so that they wouldn't crash from the flip from 1999 to 2000 on their various parts of their computer in the code. So fiber optic cables were laid from US to India. There was also the growth of satellite communications and the internet with voice over internet protocol. And so then by the early 2000s, a huge amount of back office work from the US was shifted to India. And at one point, 80% of the Forbes 500 companies had some of their back office work shifted to India. Now, I think it was around the year 2011 or 2015, global pattern shifted to the Philippines. So now most of the call centers Philippines has a higher number of call centers than India, but the two are hand in hand.
India and the Philippines. So do you find in your research or from talking with call center workers that resentment about outsourcing factors into the harassment that call center workers face?
Absolutely. There are a number of factors that go into the sort of unpleasant feelings that customers have when they talk on the phone to outsource call centers. And Joshua alluded to some of these. Some of it is about the accent, some of it is about communication, some of it is about the process, the thing that they've called for, right? Like they're angry about that their computer doesn't work or that they couldn't get their ticket that they were trying to get online or whatever. And some of it is about the process of outsourcing itself and that jobs have gone overseas. And then added to that is also whatever political context is happening at that moment. So after 9/11, for instance, there was really a heightened tension with calls going to India and South Asia and, you know, calling these workers terrorists. Even though they weren't in the region of the participants of 9/11 and such. So, there are many, many sort of compounded factors that go into why customers are upset on the phone.
Well, Liz writes, I worry that this technology may only make us less tolerant of others due to a lack of exposure to people who sound different from ourselves. As a former customer service rep and a telemarketer, I do wonder how much of the rudeness directed at call center representatives is more related to other issues. Wading through a series of tedious voice-assisted menus, being misunderstood by those automated voice response systems, being dropped after 30 minutes of hold time due to inadequate staffing by the corporation, or the irritation of having to require said service to begin with because of poor product design or user error. Scott writes, in the example sound, I could understand both the accented and the modified, but how well does this work on the very thick, almost unintelligible accents? My dislike of call center interactions isn't a race or accent issue. It's that I literally cannot understand the person who will be trying to assist me over the phone. Winifred, I think some of your research has touched on this in that the corporations, to some degree, do set up these workers for the harassment that they receive. Can you talk about what role you think they play in doing that?
So when you say corporations, you mean the ones who are contracting the service from the U.S.?
Yes, both the companies that are contracting them and also the way that the call centers themselves are run, too.
Right. U.S. firms, by sending their work processes, their customer service overseas, are putting a huge, geographic distance between the workforce and the customer, and they're doing it largely, for cost saving purposes, and then they encounter this problem of two nationalities talking to each other on the phone. And instead of dealing with that directly and trying to find, some coping mechanisms for cross-cultural communication, they then turn to easy strategies for covering up the whole process that they've set up in the first place. And the burden of dealing with that tension is then put on to the worker. And I've described this process, this labor process that these outsourced call centers use in India as one of national identity management. So like we've heard earlier, workers are asked to put on an Indian name, an American name, and sometimes they're able to choose that themselves, or sometimes it's given to them by their boss, or sometimes it's actually given by the client firm in the US who sends them over a list. They are required to go through that accent training for grammar, pitch, speed, sort of emotional labor over the phone, how to appease the customer, how to sound polite yourself. They also have to go through conversational training, so in some cases, to sound like they are in the U.S. through the substance of what they're talking about, not just the sound and accent, but knowing the local news, where they're calling, the weather, the latest politics, the features of the state, all of these things are part of the package. And then in some cases, they are also taught a script of what to say when workers ask them where they are.
So even if for some of our listeners, they're saying that the accent or the race is not the issue, certainly, or feeling like they're talking to someone in a foreign country, certainly this extensive training you're describing is that it is an issue for a lot of people. Let me go to Alexander in Richmond. Hi, Alexander.
Hello, Nina. Thank you for taking my call. The issues that I wanted to bring up, well, first of all, I think it's a great idea that this is facilitating easier communication across cultures. I've been on customer service many times, and I've had to ask people to repeat things. However, it is, I think the software is, in a way, forcing people to lie about who they are in order to make things easier for white society in the United States.
Yeah.
I think they're catering to white supremacy because that is such a big element in United States culture right now. It is completely against multiculturalism, and it's pretending that the world is not connected, that we live in a bubble. We want to hear American English, and that's that.
Well, Alexander, thanks for sharing your thoughts. You know, Joshua, I understand that part of what intrigued you to do this piece was that fact that they were creating some idea of an idealized standard American voice, and that you yourself have had to use what you call white voice in journalism. Can you just describe what that means before our break here?
Sure. White voice is this, you know, very filtered, very sort of, how do I describe it? It's a very strange form of, not strange, but like it's a very standard form of English where you're just, you know, you're speaking proper, right? Like this idea that there's like a right way to speak English, even though America is such a vast and wide country with so many different regionalities and different kinds of enclaves. And, you know, you sort of get used to this idea that there's a standard American English. We hear it all the time on TV, on radio. We get this fed, this idea that there is a traditional, typical English. And that is something that's been jarring for me throughout my whole time as a journalist. Even now, it's still a bit jarring.
Yeah. If we work in the news industry, there's a lot of standards in how we're supposed to speak and write that seem on the face neutral, but often are not. We'll be exploring this more right after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, The smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
When people say I talk with a white voice anyway, so why ain't it helping me out?
Well, you don't talk white enough. I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. Any white is just proper. I'm talking about the real deal.
Okay, so like...
Hello, Mr. Everett. Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother you.
I mean, you got it wrong. I'm not talking about sounding all nasal. It's like sounding like you don't have a care. Got your bills paid. You're happy about your future. You're about ready to jump in your Ferrari out there after you get off this call. Put some real breath in there. Breezy, like, I don't really need this money. You've never been fired. Only laid off. It's not really a white voice. It's what they wish they sounded like. So it's like what they think they're supposed to sound like. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
That's a cut from Boots Riley's 2018 film, Sorry to Bother You, where Danny Glover tells Lakeith Stanfield to use his white voice in their jobs as telemarketers. They play characters who are telemarketers. And of course, those white voices were performed by David Cross and Ryan Corsi. And the reason it's relevant is we're talking about new technology that claims to remove accents from the speech of call center workers to sound more like a stereotypically white voice. And while in this case, it's call center workers who are usually fielding calls, say, from people whose technology is not working or their bill is wrong, as opposed to telemarketers, it was a film that was brought up earlier by a listener. So we thought we would play that for you. Joining us right now is Joshua Botte, assistant news editor at SF Gate, whose piece, Sonus, the buzzy Bay Area startup that wants to make the world sound whiter, inspired today's show. Winifred Poster is with us, author of Borders in Service, Enactments of Nationhood in Transnational Call Centers. Winifred is director of the Labor Tech Research Center and adjunct faculty in international affairs at Washington University, St. Louis. You, our listeners, are joining us with questions for our guests. If you've worked in a call center and what your experience has been like, what does this make you think about your own interactions with call center workers? And let's add one more element into it. If you've ever had to use a quote-unquote white voice, you can share that too. Email forum at kqed.org or call us 866-733-6786. Well, joining me now is Tom McEnany, Associate Professor of Comparative Literature and of Spanish and Portuguese at UC Berkeley. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, happy to be here.
And I understand you welcomed a newborn into your family last night? Oh my God, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I can't believe you're with us, but we're really glad you are because I understand you teach a class called Sounding American. So let's focus a little bit about this phenomenon of the white voice and what one of our callers was talking about in terms of this idea that it caters to sort of a white sound. Can you talk about first, how we got here, what has it meant to sound American in the past, and hopefully where it's going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is this history of bias that's built, first of all, into technology. So early radio, radio microphones were built for normative male physiology, meaning longer vocal cords. And so when women spoke on the radio with traditionally or normatively shorter vocal cords, their voices were higher and their voices were distorted. So right there, that bias already shaped who should be on the radio. And Broadcasting helps influence what people think of as normal speech, whether that broadcasting is via radio or via television or now via social media. So that connects to these ongoing stories of bias and technology, but part of the connection to what we think of as a white voice that's also connected to this notion of sounding American is that linguists talk about general American English as the sound of unaccented speech in the United States. And that's a sound of speech that comes from the what they call the North Midland region, which is Missouri, southern South Dakota, central Illinois. It just so happens that Walter Cronkite is from that area. Tom Brokaw is from that area. And so those, and it's also demographically the widest region of the United States. And so this notion of sounding American as connected to a particular racial identity connects with a history of technology and a history of media to make us assume that these speech patterns sound normal and define a general sense of whether you're American or not.
It's been so powerful. I mean, so that people of color, myself included, you try to speak in a certain voice to gain entry, to gain access, to not be excluded or defined by dominant cultures, which therein lies the problem. But I wonder if in your class right now, some of these norms are changing, hopefully?
Norms are changing all the time. So, you know, there was a 2018 commercial that was for Google where Kevin Durant, they were teaching people to say, "Hey, Google," to make the voice assistant work. And Kevin Durant was on it and he was saying, "Yo, Google." And they laughed about it and they said, "Oh, you know, this is, Kevin, we can't change the whole algorithm for you." And in fact, it came out a couple of years later that not just Google, but Siri and Alexa, et cetera, were really bad at understanding African-American vernacular English, or anything that departed from standard American English. And so, you know, that's the technology not keeping up with different ways of speaking. And in class, you know, this week, for instance, we're talking about gender and sexuality. We're talking about vocal fry and how important vocal fry is for a younger generation of speakers, especially female speakers. But older generations of speakers, including the broadcast NPR broadcaster Bob Garfield, would complain about this form of speech and say women shouldn't be speaking that way. So language is dynamic. It changes all the time. And you need to keep up with those changes rather than trying to reinforce an old norm that's going to demand people fit into something that doesn't sound like them.
Well, we have a couple of comments here. Gail writes, for example, "I think this is a complicated issue, but I do see one real practical advantage to this technology. My mother is very hard of hearing, which makes it hard for her to understand anyone with an accent. So she is generally unable to resolve her concerns when dealing with anyone with an accent at a call center. This technology would solve that problem for her." At the same time, we also get a listener who tweets, "The fact that we see accented speech from the global south is not desirable is pure and simple colonialism, because you won't see anyone complaining about UK English, French, or German accents. We need to train ourselves to listen to accented speech because the US accent is in the minority." And Jennifer writes, "How is this going to help racist Americans get past their biases if we keep placating to them? Companies should find ways to step in to mitigate abusive callers. Call center employees should be allowed to disconnect or transfer callers to supervisors if they're being mistreated by them." So I guess, do you worry that this tech will have a negative impact, Tom McEnany, given what you have been teaching and researching related to sounding American and the white voice?
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with your callers who, you know, are afraid of the uniformity it could produce, the fact that it's really, as Winifred pointed out, it's covering up the whole process of global racial capitalism, to use jargon. So, you know, it's covering up the process that, companies in the United States are hiring, underpaid workers in other countries, underpaid workers who tend to be people of color, precisely so that they can make more money. And I think that it's cynical to say that, as the founder of Sana said, that, you know, he hopes and prays that the world changes. But rather than developing tech that might change the world, it's developing tech to make a buck off of reinforcing social norms. And once you make a certain voice, normative like this and part of the technology, then people feel like they have to use it. And then everyone has to change their voices so that they sound like that norm. And so that's just reinforcing bias, it's reinforcing prejudice, maybe even, as one caller said, it's reinforcing white supremacy. And I don't think that's what the aim of tech should be.
Well, let me go to caller Sarah in Oakland. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I am just super surprised that more people aren't concerned with the abuse individual call center workers need to have to take. And this is like a tool that will mitigate some of that abuse. And then, you know, certainly other forces need to be working on the larger problem. But I think about call center workers taking one, you know, one call after another, being told horrible things. And I just, people are dismissing this so easily, I feel like.
Winifred, let me go to you on that, because the point has been made that in some ways, by, you've talked about the distance between the people who are calling with the call centers that they are calling into. But I think there is also something that Sarah's call is making me think about, which has been concerns about already people on the phone are somewhat dehumanized. Sarah is reacting to a lack of concern, it feels like, or outrage over the way call center workers are being treated. What do you think about that? And do you think an added sort of filter like this accent minimizer, I guess for lack of a better word, will further that sense of distance and potential dehumanizing impact?
Absolutely. I mean, so many things really concern me about this technology. One being that it really solidifies what are, you know, a new type of sort of exploitation of what were former colonial relations are now neocolonial relations. So a lot of these call centers are going to countries that used to be a colony. You know, Spanish call center clients are taking call centers in Latin America, and France, French corporations are going to parts of Africa that are French speaking that were former colonies. It's really reifying these tensions in a new kind of way on a geopolitical level, but also in terms of the technology. So it sort of solidifies not only bias, but deception. So that, you know, there's so many times where now consumers are not sure of who they are talking to on the phone, and, you know, whether they are talking to an AI or a robot or a chatbot. And this, you know, sort of exacerbates that problem, as well as imagine a scenario where, you know, right now the call center worker's voice is being changed. But what would happen if also the customer's voice in the future would also be changed? Because that was sort of alluded to in Shara's discussion by saying that the workers can't understand the customer. So what if they applied it to the customer's voice as well? And then you have two, you know, deceptive, you know, non-authentic, whatever, voices talking to one another. I mean, the whole scenario just seems very surreal to me and problematic.
Well, thank you for laying that out for us. And I want to remind listeners that Winifred Poster is the director of the Labor Tech Research Network and adjunct faculty in international affairs at Washington University. We're joined by Joshua Botte, assistant news editor at SF Gate, and Tom McEnany, associate professor of comparative literature and Spanish and Portuguese at UC Berkeley. Earlier, we were joined by Sherith Kasheva Narayana, co-founder and chief operating officer at Sonus. This is a fundraising period for many public radio stations, and you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. So let me read some more comments from our listeners. This listener tweets, "As a senior, I think this is a great idea. The phone distorts sound anyway, and then adding a heavyish accent makes such calls difficult to navigate. I don't give any call center workers any difficulties. I just hang up and call again and hope for someone with a more approachable accent." Carl tweets, "As a mixed-race American, I can understand both sides. Often people judge you by your accent. However, when calling in, many people are dealing with a problem outside of their comfort level. If they are anxious and frustrated because before the call, poor communication doesn't help." And Viola writes, I used to work with an organic scientist 20 years ago who interviewed for his position at UCSF in the 70s. He interviewed by phone and only had a, quote, white voice. When he arrived, he told me he could see the shock in his new colleagues and PI's face when they realized they had hired a black guy. So, guests, I guess I just want to ask you what you feel like needs to be done. Clearly, some people are seeing the value in this, but there are some significant downsides or issues and problems in society that this perpetuates. So, Joshua Bote, for example, what do people who are developing the AI need to think about when they are coming up with these voices or these end product voices for people with accents?
Right. And that's a great question. I think so much of technology is predicated on this idea that, you know, it's going to be a net good no matter what. Like, people come in and sort of parachute in and present these ideas as groundbreaking into the world without sort of acknowledging the realities of call center workers. And I know that Sherith was worked at a call center, but there is sort of this idea that, you know, bias doesn't exist in AI research and technology research in general. And I think that so often the philosophy of, you know, move fast, break things, and then we'll go from there feels like it needs to change, especially in AI, where, you know, racism and bias is so rampant in, you know, in different kinds of AI, like not just voice AI, but, you know, like photo AI. Like, I think there just needs to be this understanding, this like deep thought that there is bias in this world and that AI does reify bias that is already pre-existing in our society.
And Winifred, for you, just what is the biggest meaningful change you think could happen for call center workers, or that should happen?
Yeah, I think the emphasis on, you know, trying to use technology as a quick fix really should be reconsidered. And in my experience, you know, I've sat in call centers in India, listening to the conversations. There are many conversations, as one of your callers, you know, alluded to, that are actually really respectful and inquisitive and supportive across cultures. And I think if the same amount of resources were put into researching those contexts and those conversations and how to make more of those kinds of conversations from human beings versus all of this technology, we could get a lot further.
And Tom McEnany, broadly, socially, what do we need to do so that we aren't placing superiority on certain ways of, quote, sounding American, or the work that we as a culture need to do in terms of our expectations for who we speak with and how we relate to them?
I think that we need to speak to more people and reflect on the way that we listen and reflect on the way that bias is built into our listening. And as both Joshua and Winifred have said, I don't think that tech or the money that's invested in tech to solve a problem, which is really a problem for the call center corporations and not for the call center workers themselves, I think, you know, we should shift that money and shift that research. It shouldn't go to make money reinforcing social norms. It should be money that's addressed to challenging them and giving people more opportunities to, you know, to expand the notion of what, for instance, sounding American is. If you just listen to people walking down the street, there are a lot of voices out there. There's nothing close to the voice even of, you know, Boots Riley's wonderful parody of what white voice is.
Well, Tom McEnany, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And welcome to the world, your little girl. Tom McEnany is Associate Professor of Comparative Literature and of Spanish and Portuguese at UC Berkeley. Joshua Bote, thank you as well. Assistant News Editor at SFGate, check out his piece, Sonus, the Buzzy Bay Area Startup That Wants to Make the World Sound Whiter. Winifred Poster, really glad to have you on too. Author of Borders and Service, Enactments of Nationhood in Transnational Call Centers. Director of the Labor Tech Research Network and faculty at Washington University in St. Louis. Thank you, listeners, as always, for sharing your thoughts, insights, and experiences. Thank you, Caroline Smith, for producing today's segment. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.